Welcome to Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Jeff Beagles. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. So glad you could wake up a bit earlier with us as we are now moving to our new time throughout the course of training camp. Big Blue Kickoff Live will be up and running at 10 a.m. Eastern each and every weekday. Training camp well underway. Today is the first practice. It'll get underway at 11:40 a.m., so we will get into that. We'll also recap Jerry Reese's press conference and get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter as well. Jeff, how are we doing today?
I feel like it's November in here.
It is a little nippy.
It's freezing,
yes,
in this room today. But it's going to be hot on the field. First
Look at
day
that.
Of training
the
camp.
Transition I'm, right
I'm
away.
I'm doing well. Man, do I remember these days like it was yesterday coming into camp.
Totally imagine.
There's a lot of guys that probably didn't get a lot of sleep last night. A lot of anxious people. A lot of the rookies a little nervous. There's just, you know, this isn't OTAs. This isn't mini camp. This is the real deal now. And every day is a step closer to the season. And every day is a step closer for these guys knowing what their future is going to be like. Because, you know, when you look at this roster and the competition and the way it's built, you got a lot of starters coming back from the 11-5 season last year. You got a lot of guys that are here to try to make the team, and not a lot of spots that are open. But there will be some really good battles that we'll be discussing, I'm sure, over the course of time here. But it's an exciting day in the building. Everybody's up and going. I mean, people are going crazy here from a administrative side because the first day, you got to work out all these kinks, you know. You got all kinds of things. You got new interns. We got a couple interns in here today working the phones.
Cast of thousands in here.
We got all kinds of newness around the building. But you and I aren't new. It's exciting. I know the fans are excited. I had mentioned earlier, I think last week before you got on the show with me last time, is that, you know, if you want to look at the Giants.com, go on there. All practices are not open to the public, but some of them are. Make sure you go on there and look at the dates because you don't want to come out here on a day that they're not open. You'll have the lock on that gate, and you're going to be
yes.
like, what's going on here?
You'll be trying to jump over the fence.
Yeah, and then Murph, the big security guard, will throw your butt out of here. So make sure you do that, and it should be a fun time for the fans. Of course, there's all kinds of things to do here during training camp. The stands are covered, so there'll be water, refreshments. There's going to be, you know, a lot of alumni out here signing autographs on the days that it is open to the public, so it's going to be a lot of fun, and we're all excited.
Well, you'll be front and center one of those days.
I'm going to be front and center. Okay, get your pens ready and get
say,
your phones
you
out.
You might as well tell everybody.
On August 2nd, I will be out here. I think that's next Tuesday. Or this Tuesday, actually, coming up. So that'll be fun. A couple hours out there signing autographs for the fans. See all the Feagles jerseys come out from the sellers. There's not very many of those. So the guys that do come out wearing the Feagles jerseys, I appreciate that a lot.
Yes, absolutely. Extra security, though, will be brought in.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're working
well.
On that.
Yeah.
I told them that probably three or four will work this year. Last year they had 10. I don't think I need 10 around me. But really, I think it'll be fine.
Well, they went through their own training camp to train security for your arrival.
Yeah, long lines
yes.
at the Feagles line. So make sure you bring some water.
Record crowds expected. On a more serious note, Jerry Reese addressed the media yesterday, and we do want to go over some of the things that he mentioned, then we'll get into some of the storylines to watch and open up the phone lines. And the biggest takeaway, Jeff, from Jerry Reese's press conference was the fact that they're not going to try to overwork the veterans during camp. Now, I don't think this is anything new. You can relate to this from your time since you were in a lot of different camps and you were a well-established veteran. But the point is that Eli's entering his 14th season in the NFL, and they want him to be fresh late in the season. So I think that the outlook is if we can limit the amount of throws, limit the amount of reps in camp, that can help preserve him for the long run of the campaign.
Well, it makes sense. And I just from my perspective, in my 14th season, after going 22, you do have to take a little bit of a rest in training camp as you get a little bit older. Because what happens is that your body doesn't recover when you start getting a little bit older. So it does take a little bit of time, and it does wear on you. So they want to get Eli fresh for the season. I also think that there's a little bit of a side note to this. The fact that they have to find the number two quarterback. And they have Davis Webb on the roster who they drafted. They want to see him compete in training camp because you know they're not going to see him on the field. They want to see who's going to be that backup quarterback between Geno Smith and Johnson. So we'll see what happens there. But I think that's a little bit more of it too. And also you want to rest Eli, but I think the competition, the number two, and also to see Webb with some reps and practice and get some things done for an evaluation process. Because Lance, even though, you know, we are talking about Eli and his reps and stuff, in training camp, it's all about reps. It's all about competition. It's all about evaluation. That's what this 4 or 5 weeks is for. Training camp is to make the roster. If you really went down and looked at the 53 guys that you think are going to make this team out of the 90 that are here, you can get pretty close to who's going to be on this team. But you still want to see who those guys on the back end of the roster are. Those are your biggest needs to fill, is who the guys on the back end of the roster, who's going to be your special teams players. So that's what they're looking at in camp. But as far as Eli goes, you know, why not? I mean, what else do you need to see from Eli? I mean, obviously, yeah, you need to see health is what you want to see, because the guy's getting up there in age, and you want to make sure that he's healthy going into the season, because there's a lot of expectations going into this 2017 season for the Giants, and certainly it rides on Eli's shoulder to stay healthy, which he's always done, and this will only help him.
And even Jerry Reese admitted everybody's a competitor, even the established starters. They always want to get out on the field, so sometimes you have to protect them from themselves and say, listen, a few less reps is not going to hurt you. But I don't really think this is a new development, because if you remember, Jeff, a few seasons ago, Eli had off-season ankle surgery. Remember, he suffered an ankle injury the last game of the regular season, and he wound up missing a lot of the off-season programming. So, you know, that served a purpose to at least limit the amount of reps he took, so he wasn't worn out by the time training camp started. So, I mean, this is just, I think, something that they're making publicly known more so than we've heard about perhaps in the past.
Well, also, they're making it publicly known so they don't have to keep getting asked about it when they come to the podium, like, why didn't Eli throw today?
You know, well, why was he taking first team reps?
We're telling you this right now so that we can eliminate the questions on the podium going forward, so you just know, hey, he's going to take a day off here. He's not going to throw 7-on-7 here. Whatever it is, that's what it's going to be.
But I think you also brought up another good point about, aside from Eli, the narrative that they have a number of other young quarterbacks in camp, and you want them to build chemistry with the rest of the personnel, and you want to see not only how they perform in preseason games, because they're going to get plenty of reps in preseason games.
Oh, sure.
That's not the question.
Other than that third game, I mean, they're all going to see.
Yeah, they're all going to be under center.
Action. Yeah.
But you want to see also how they do in practice and how they handle 7-on-7s and all the other types of drills, because I think that gives you a different look at how a player responds as well.
Well, you have to understand, too, from a fan's perspective, you got to kind of realize what goes into practice. Okay, so everybody realizes that practice is practice. What are you practicing? Well, you're practicing plays, you're practicing procedure, you're practicing all this. But one of the evaluation tools that the team uses is the fact that when these guys are in meetings before practice, they're in meetings the night before practice, they are installing stuff. They want to make sure that the guys that are on the field for practice are absorbing what they're learning in the classroom, and carryover is there. So that makes a big difference when it comes down to the 53-man roster, is can this guy relate to the plays? Can he relate to – because remember, during the season – there's different game plans every week.
Yeah.
They put in different plays. They put in different defenses. You got to be able to take that and apply it to what's going on in the field and not make mental mistakes. A guy might have the most talent in the world, but he might be not the sharpest knife in the drawer. He's not going to make the team, because the team is not going to feel comfortable putting that guy in the field and make mistakes that's going to cost you games.
And that's extremely important to see at the quarterback position, more so than any other position.
More than any other position. But the fact is that these guys have vetted the players that are here. They understand how smart they are. There's very rarely are there some guys that come into the league nowadays that don't have a good concept of football and X's and O's and way to apply things and how to change coverages and things like that, or read coverages, excuse me. It's very important at the quarterback. It's absolutely the most important.
So that means that Geno Smith, Josh Johnson, and Davis Webb cannot subscribe to Jeff Fiegel's school of thought, which was to head to the pool to unwind each and every day during training camp, correct?
They will not be doing that. I think I might have been the only one in the history to ever be able to pull that off, but I did.
and you did that under Tom Coughlin.
And I did it,
which is extremely impressive.
It was. It took a little while, but I finally convinced them that, you know, I'm doing you no good standing on this football field in the morning for 2 hours doing nothing. Why don't you let me just go into the pool and get my pool workout in and my stretching, stuff like that. Now, remember, that was in my 18th year.
Yes.
So you talk about doing things different. That was doing things outside the box right there. But it worked, and that's what I had to do to stay in shape because I couldn't do a lot of the running and things like that. So the pool, to me, was a perfect conditioning tool.
And Ben McAdoo did indicate, in all seriousness, that the schedule is cooperating this training camp where they are going to have built-in hydration days and rest days, much more so than he felt that they've had in previous years. So that's something that they're going to look to work to make sure that they have everybody well-rested and have them ready to go throughout the course of training camp as well as the preseason games. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We're going to open up the phone line, so let's get the festivities going. We've got Victor in Florida to start things off. Vic, what's happening?
What's up, Vic?
Good morning, Jeff and Lance. First of all, I want to say, Jeff, I always admire your ability to pick up pigskin. and I still do.
Thank you.
Lance, I'd like to ask you a question, okay? And I'm going to try to answer it myself, but you correct me if I'm wrong, okay? I've been watching football now for 50-something years, and I still don't understand some of the terminologies. And we were talking briefly the other day about the linebackers, and you said the way I understood it, you said something about, well, the linebackers today are not as vital as they were 20 years ago. Now, is it because the safeties are bigger and they're playing in a location like the box where they can help out a linebacker and also on the running game, or what?
Well, what I had alluded to, and Jeff can share some insight on this as well, I think when you look at structures of offenses, Vic, you have more teams showcasing three wide receiver sets than we had seen in the past, and that means that you normally need the extra defensive back on the field, or if you're going to bring an extra safety, it's because you have confidence that the safety is strong enough in coverage. Now, I'm generalizing here. There are some linebackers that are very good in coverage. For example, if Luke Kuechly was on my team, I'm not taking Luke Kuechly off the field. I'm referring to the Carolina Panthers linebacker. He's very good at stopping the run and dropping back in coverage. Most linebackers, though, are much more effective down near the line of scrimmage and in the box area. So that's why if you have extra wide receivers on the field and extra tight ends that you're going up against, you probably want to go with a safety or a corner who I think is much more comfortable in coverage. So I think it's more of what the offense is presenting, Vic, as opposed to what the linebacker can't do or the limitations of the linebacker.
And it's also, real quickly, Vic, it's also the evolution of the game. I mean, when you go back 25 years ago and look at the offense and what they ran, there was always a tight end that really wasn't a tight end catching tight end. It was a blocking tight end, two wide receivers.
Right.
And so now in today's game, you pretty much have three wide receivers on the field, and that one wide receiver may not necessarily be a wide receiver. It could be a guy like Ingram, a tight end who's capable of catching like a wide receiver. So, and really when you look at matchups, that's what it's all about. So if you have a linebacker like a Luke Kuechly that can match up against a tight end or even one of the slower wide receivers, they will keep him on the field. If you don't have the matchup, then they'll bring an extra nickel corner in and take a linebacker out of the game.
Okay, but my question is, when they refer to the box area, what is that, the box area?
The box is tackle to tackle. So that's your box. So when you say six in a box, three in a box, four in a box, it's from the tackles to the tackles. That is your box area. So a box safety means a guy comes down inside the tackles to play inside the box, if you will.
Yeah, it's basically a designation of where the players lined up so that you know if somebody perhaps moved over or is a little bit out of position.
Okay. Well, listen, I was just curious. I wanted to know, and I should know these things watching football after so many years.
I was going to say, Vic, you should be teaching us about this stuff.
But
that's
why we're here. That's why we're here, to help people like you, Vic. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for the answer, and you guys have a great weekend, okay?
You're welcome. Vic, appreciate the phone call. And I also need to commend Vic, by the way, on a side note. I told him yesterday we had butchered his name, and I said that, listen, you got to bring your A game. You got to enunciate when you call in. Our screeners, they're waiting to jot down your information.
Oh, what'd you call him?
Well, Rick, we've called him in the past. That first letter in his name, he has not yet perfected. Okay. Today, brought his A game. That V in Velcro, I told him to emphasize.
There you go.
And he came. So we're very excited to hear that Vic has worked out the kinks as we start training camp here. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Christian in New York. Christian, welcome to the program. What do you got for us?
Hey, guys. I wanted to mention Davis Webb. I feel like with the kind of passion the guy has for the game and just I don't mean it in a negative way, but how, you know, everyone makes him sound so obsessed with football, I guess the way you'd want to be if you're playing in the pros. But and the fact that Mike Sullivan said he really likes his deep ball, I feel like those are some a lot of stuff there that should have us optimistic about the guy.
Oh, there's no question. I was very optimistic on him in the off season for the OTAs and the mini camps, just watching him throw the football. He's a big kid. I mean, tall, can throw it. And listen, in today's day and age with the game the way it is, if you got a guy that can go deep and you don't have a quarterback to throw it, then you're really in, you're no luck there. This guy's definitely going to have a chance to learn underneath a guy that prepares like no other person in the NFL, and Eli Manning. He's going to be able to learn some of the ways that you become a pro at that position. And this is only going to help him in the long run. And you will see some of those long balls in preseason. Trust me, they want to see him throw it in the NFL game and see how accurate he can be. And you're certainly going to see that. I promise you.
Definitely. And I wanted to mention another factor with why else it might be a smart pick. The Giants are in such a good position, almost having just a complete set of worthy starters across the board. Except for, I mean, I know they like B.J. Goodson, but as of right now, except for middle linebacker and the offensive line, and in the third round, I don't think you were going to find anything that could come in and start anyway at middle linebacker or line. I mean, those positions dried up pretty quick in the draft this year. So, you know, why not take a chance at potentially getting your next quarterback for the future?
Well, I think that was their intent, and I don't know what their plan was going into the draft, but I know that that the Giants typically are sitting there with the best available attitude. And when he was sitting there in the third round, and because of all the due diligence that they do on all the players, I don't think they had a choice. I think they said, you know what, we got to grab this guy. And, you know, there was a lot of talks about the Giants going after a quarterback in the first or second round because of the age of Eli Manning and this and that. But I think that they feel comfortable in the guy that they got. Listen, it's just a designation. It's a third-round draft pick, okay? Well, after this season, that's just a statistic for him. Oh, it was a third-round draft pick. For this point on, it's about competition. It's about availability. It's about timing, being in the right place at the right time. So this guy's got a bright future ahead of him, and just because he is a third round draft pick doesn't mean that he's going to be all that bad or all that good. Who knows? You look at Tom Brady. That's just a classic
late
example of a guy that, you know, who cares about what draft pick you are, you know?
Dak Prescott was a fourth rounder last year. It's all about the opportunity.
Whether or not you capitalize on it. It's opportunity, it's timing. Look at Dak Prescott. Timing, right? Opportunity. Tony Romo out. This guy comes in as a fourth rounder. Everybody was like, what? And then all of a sudden, remember the first half of the season, they had the reins on him. And then finally the second half, they said, okay, we'll start throwing the ball down a little bit. Did fine. You know, so we're not going to know about Davis Webb for a while, but we're going to see a little bit of what he's all about in the preseason. So stay tuned for that.
Right. And just the fact that Eli is really getting up there in age. I know he doesn't really express much, but I honestly feel that just watching his play last year, I understand the line wasn't very good, but he just seems so much less willing to take some hits now than he used to be a couple years ago. He used to be known for being so brave in the pocket and taking a beating just to, you know, make a short pass. And, you know, he looks like he plays a little different now, and not that I blame him. I mean,
well, but let me just tell you something. That one term that's used in the meeting rooms as far as from the defensive perspective on quarterbacks is that the quarterback hits are cumulative. Over time, they become they hurt a little bit more and more as you get older. And really, the way that the line performed last year, I don't blame Eli for being a little skittish here and there, but, you know, I think that he feels confident going into this season that line has gotten better and that he's going to have to improve his footwork a little bit in the pocket and just trying to stay in there a little bit longer, let some of the pass routes develop rather than getting a little happy feet. But that's all predicated on the play of the offensive line. The better the offensive line the plays, the better the quarterback feels, the better he throws the ball and all the thing. It's all in correlation when you talk about that.
And remember, let's not forget, Christian, that he took a big hit from Chris Baker very early last season. Remember that Redskins game at MetLife Stadium? I mean, the fact that he got up was amazing, considering how hard Chris Baker hit him. Now, I'm not saying that that impacted his mindset the rest of the season, but I slightly disagree that he was unwilling to take hits when clearly that happened very early in the season, and that almost, like, set the tone. All right, you know, I better embrace the fact that this is going to be a little bit more physical than I anticipated.
Yeah, and I remember that hit, and I actually discussed with a lot of my friends that are real hard on Eli that I actually had a little bit of a theory that he had some sort of injury from that hit, because I mean, you're right, that was absolutely nasty.
Yeah.
And you know, it just, he did look different after that. And when I watch, you know, highlights of the first couple games, he looked like he was standing in the pocket a little longer. So, I mean, and he's the king of hiding things sometimes. I mean, so for all we know, there was something significantly wrong with him, and he was just, you know, toughing his way through it.
Or some of that is what the call develops into, and whether or not he's waiting in terms of a wide receiver route to pop open a little bit later on. I mean, unless you know the call, it's hard to understand why he holds the ball X amount of times, why he gets rid of it quickly. And appreciate the phone call, Christian. I think you really need to understand what the logic is behind the play, Jeff, before we jump to conclusions, because sometimes the play is called for, you got to wait a little bit until those wide receivers get down the field, and that's why obviously the quarterback needs to buy some time under those circumstances.
That's why I said it all depends on the offensive line. If the offensive line is playing well, then you can let your routes develop and be able to sit in the pocket, step up, make the throw. I will tell you this, if for all the golfers that are out there, you know, a lot of this is, you know, from the shoulders up. And what happens is, if you know, ever played golf and you know you start missing little short putts here and there, or you can't hit a 7-iron somewhere, it kind of messes with your brain a little bit. You take a hit from Chris Baker like he did, you know, that's in your mind. And as much as you think it's easy to get out, it's not. You know, I'll just never forget the first time that I dropped a snap on an extra point. For the life of me, for 3 or 4 or 5 games, I could not stop thinking about dropping the stupid football. And it's just tough to get out of your mind. So these are things a lot of people don't understand at a high level that these guys are at. And the athletes that are lining up on the other side of the ball and how fast and how physical they are, you can't for 1 minute think that Eli Manning or a Ben Roethlisberger or any of those guys that are pocket passers that are sitting in that pocket not thinking that they're going to take a hit and what it's going to feel like. Okay, some guys are fearless at a young age, but if you play for as long as Eli has and he's been taking some hits over the years and has not missed games, it kind of wears on you a little bit. So I think that, you know, he needs to get together with that offensive lineman and say, hey, boys, pick it up a little bit, give me a little bit more time, and we're going to be fine, especially who the guys I'm throwing to this year.
And Big Ben's a good example that you brought up. Big Ben, obviously, structurally is a different type of quarterback than Eli Manning. But over the course of time, all the hits that he took add up. Looks like we got a dial tone there. They add up because of all the hits, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's sidelined for a few weeks, and you don't even have your starting quarterback.
There you go.
So you have to think sometimes what's best for not just me, but for the well-being of the team, too.
Sure, and it's a great analogy because, you know, you're right. Ben misses a lot of time, you know, and you know, Eli doesn't. So a lot of times when you see him kind of just, you know, throwing the ball away and not taking the hit, you know, look at the long term here. He's back in the lineup the next snap and the next game and the next game and the next game. So sometimes it's all not that bad if he's throwing the ball away or throwing it to the guy's feet just to take on, you know, get the next play.
Let's head back to the phone lines, 201-939-4513. Mark is in Miami. Mark, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
What's up, Mark?
Hey, appreciate the show. I just had a couple questions related to where the waiver position is and where you think they're going to be looking off offensive line. Obviously comes out. I think that obviously that the addition to Brandon Marshall with his blocking, as well as the fact that I think people are going to underestimate what Perkins can do given the starting role, is going to take some pressure off the offensive line. But do you feel like that's their number one look if they can find something that somebody lets go during the training camp?
Wow.
It's interesting you brought that up because Ben McAdoo was asked about the fact that the offensive line looks like it's coming back intact. Is that sort of a vote of confidence? And what he indicated was they did their homework during the draft. They looked at free agency, and they believe that their best options were in-house as opposed to going to external options. Now, does that philosophy change if somebody attractive, as you alluded to, Mark, is out there on the free agent market? It's possible that philosophy changes, but I think all the signals that have been shown by at least the coaching staff at this point is that they are content with the five that are right now in the starting lineup and the ones on the back end that are trying to push them out for starting jobs, meaning DJ Fluker, who arrived, and some of the other guys who they drafted, as opposed to perhaps going out and trying to bring somebody from another team that was waived. So I think it's possible they bring in somebody. Listen, we've seen veteran free agents be added during training camp in previous years, but I would not bank on that they are hoping that somebody is released from another team so that they could save this offensive line. I think they're going to try to battle it out internally here.
Well, I'll tell you,
do you have any idea where their current waiver position is?
Well, remember, the waiver position doesn't go into effect until the regular season starts with respect to, you know, where your record is. Prior to that, it's a lot of it is sometimes based on previous years as well as what takes place during training camp. So what I guess what I mean is the typical waiver wire doesn't go into effect until we see some of the records play out. But that doesn't happen until you get into a few weeks into the regular season. So I'm not exactly sure what the positioning is right now, but it's not like, okay, well, based on where they finished last year or where they finished the previous year, that they have some type of an advantage at this point.
I'll give you my quick take on basically the free agents or anybody that's getting cut from other teams. It's going to be a company line. The fact is that, you know, if I'm the general manager and the coaching staff and I'm looking at my guys that are on the roster, and if I feel like there's another player out there that can improve the position of our roster, whether it's a starter or a backup guy or this and that, they're going to make the move. But they're not going to make the move unless, number one, they feel that that person's better than what they have now, and number two, the financial aspects about it too. Because you got to remember, a lot of the guys – right now, there's nobody available. Okay, I mean, the Raiders just cut a left tackle or right tackle the other day. There's some guys that are out there. But for the most part, every team in the National Football League as of today is going to be in training camp. They have 90-man rosters. Their rosters are set going into training camp. There will be the waiver wire here or there and what you know whatever it is. But the fact is, there's probably not a high-priced veteran out there that's going to get cut right now. Going down to the wire at the end of the year and then into the preseason, excuse me, that's when things start to get a little bit tricky because, you know, that you've got to remember something. Not so much the waiver wire, but a veteran that is on the NFL roster as week one is guaranteed his salary. So after week one, you see a lot more movement than before week one because then they don't have to guarantee the veteran's salary. So if that guy has a $4 million salary, you know, you see him coming in week two, they might give him the $4 million, but if they cut him in week 10, they only have to pay him one-tenth of his – or 10-17ths of his salary.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing to be on that roster the first week because you're pretty much – you are guaranteed your salary for the season. You can only take that once, by the way. You can only do that once as an NFL player veteran. You can take your full salaries guaranteed if you get cut, and then you could actually go to another team – sign another contract, get paid by the first team, and still make money from the other team.
Which we've seen happen a
lot. We call it double dipping.
I had no idea.
Proper term. And just for clarification, in terms of the waiver wire, because I was looking that up, starting in week three, it goes to what the record is. But from the end of the Super Bowl till week three, it's based on the draft order. So hopefully that clarifies things, Mark, in terms
that
of
does.
Where
that
the Giants are.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
There you go.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Speaking of offensive linemen, I know there were reports this morning that the Raiders are likely going to release Austin Howard.
They said that I read it this morning that they
so
did.
So that's going to be a name, I'm sure, that is going to receive plenty of interest across the league. What's interesting about that is there's sort of a Giants connection because Marshall Newhouse was signed by Oakland, and he was competing, perhaps, for a starting job. If they get rid of Austin Howard, then I think that's an indication that Newhouse has shown them enough that they're now going to pencil him into a starting position.
Which, by the way, the Oakland Raiders have probably one of the, you know, one of the top offensive lines in the league. You know, so there's a lot of not a lot of spots to be made over there in Oakland. So, you know, who knows? But I'm with you, Lance. I think this team has said this is it. These are the guys we're going to battle with. We'll have some battles, you know, pretty much on that right side of the line. But for the most part, I think they would be looking for depth rather than starters from the offensive line position if there was somebody out there to go out and be able to be on, put on this team.
Let's head back to the phone line. So glad you could join us for Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. We're getting you set for the first practice, which kicks off at 11:40 a.m. Eastern. He's Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Meadow. We've got Greg in Atlanta. Greg, welcome to the program. What do you got for us?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well, Greg. What do you got?
All right. Hey, I'm just calling to give my bold prediction on the New York Giants this year, and I feel like based off the weapons we acquired and the direction the team is headed in, I really feel like my bold prediction is Eli Manning will have a great year this year and possibly be a candidate for MVP. Oh, yeah. And I would think Eli will get his first MVP this year.
Well, it'd be a great time to do it, especially coming off an 11-5 season. And, Listen, he's surrounded with a lot of guys that can make plays, a lot of guys that, you know, you don't have to have Eli make the plays like he has in the past. Get the ball to some of these playmakers and just let them score touchdowns. And, that, you know, certainly that would help him.
Get him out into open space.
Yeah.
The other thing to keep in mind, and listen, if Eli can win the MVP award, I'm sure that means good things because it means he put up very solid numbers. But with that being said, you know, this is still a season that I think the Giants want more balance. And they're not looking for 5,000 passing yards from Eli Manning or some ridiculous record-setting numbers. You want to see Manning obviously put up good numbers, but at the same time, you want to see the running game make strides.
Well, I think the running game is going to make strides because of who they have on the outside. I don't think you're going to see a lot of guys stacking the box like they did in the past, and that's going to open up the running game for the Giants. And I think that Paul Perkins will be the benefactor of that, and I think that the offensive line will appreciate it a little bit more, too, than not having six guys in the box every stupid play.
I'm sure Paul Perkins is not going to be complaining under those circumstances.
Yeah, I agree. And I just feel like I agree with the fact that the running game, we're looking for a more balanced attack. But I think Jeff just said, the passing game will help the running game, and it just will improve our overall record. I'm telling my friends that I'm looking for the Giants to do 13-3, 14-2, possibly. I know we have a tough schedule ahead of us, but I just feel like building off of last year's success, and not losing much of defense and improving the offense, it's highly possible that Eli can still put up good numbers and still balance the running game out and make him a candidate for MVP. Now, I have one question, and then I'll take the answer off air, and you guys have a great day. B.J. Goodson looks good to me, and I like what Ben McAdoo is doing. In years past, it seemed like the Giants were hesitant to put young players, plug them fast. And it seems like McAdoo is plugging his young players fast and giving them opportunities to play. Do you guys think that giving B.J. Goodson an opportunity to play with a void being that defensive tackle, will that help or hurt the Giants' defense? Because both of those guys are almost in line. And I just hope that it doesn't hurt the middle of the defense. I'll take the answer offline. You guys have a great day.
All right, Greg, appreciate the phone call. In terms of adding some youth in on defense, the question is, you know, could that perhaps impact the overall production? First of all, I think a veteran could very well win the starting defensive tackle job next to Snacks. I don't think Dalvin Tomlinson, the team's second-round pick this year, is a lock for that position. So I wouldn't jump the gun and say that they're definitely going to have Dalvin Tomlinson and then right behind him, B.J. Goodson. Goodson, Jeff, did not play many defensive snaps last year. He actually played a total of 13. So there's not a great deal of experience, but he's going to have a golden opportunity to solidify and win that middle linebacking job. And I don't really get too caught up in youth. To me, I think think it's more about chemistry. If B.J. Goodson could get on the same page as the defensive lineman in front of him and stay healthy and durable throughout the course of camp, I think that's going to put them in a very good position week one to feel confident that he can direct the defense, he knows what he's doing, and he feels comfortable with everybody else around him.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when you say comfortable. I think the coaching staff is comfortable with Goodson being in there. He's picked up the defense over the last year and a half that he's been here. I think that he's young. He can make some plays. He's speedy. I think the defensive line in front of him will dictate a lot of his success. I mean, when you got Snacks in there, you don't know who's going to be that other defensive tackle, whether it's Corbin Bryant or maybe it is Tomlinson. Regardless, those are two big dudes. Okay, so that middle of the defense is going to be pretty stout. So I think that he will benefit from that. I think they're very high on him as far as his ability to play that spot. Now, they went out in free agency and did nothing. So I think that just goes to show you how confident they are in their linebacker crew that's here. You look at Keenan Robinson is back. Yep. So I think that, that's the one thing that will help them a little bit. But I actually see him starting along with, the other two guys, and I think he'll be fine. I really do.
Yeah, I think that the fact that there's so many veterans around these young guys, if they do ultimately win starting jobs, I think that sets them up very nicely. Remember, Eli Apple was extremely young last year, and he had the flexibility where he didn't have to walk into a position, Jeff, where he had the entire world on his shoulders.
Sure.
Because he was playing with Landon Collins, who obviously made strides, DRC, Janoris Jenkins, and a very good defensive line. So I think it's similar in terms of the philosophy for B.J. Goodson.
And McAdoo has always said, he said it publicly, we're not afraid to play young players. And I think that that's probably a little bit of a different philosophy from the two organizations when you have the school of thought from Tom Coughlin, who was a big believer in veterans, and that Ben McAdoo is a believer, put the best guy in the field. I don't care if he's a young pup or he's a 12-year veteran. I'm going to who the best guy is going to play for me on Sunday. And that's what you have to have. You got to remember, the best guy, if he's a young guy, you're going to put him on the field because you have confidence in, number one, his ability to play, and number two, the ability to not make mistakes. I keep telling you this. Young guys make mental errors. Mental errors cost you football games. You're not going to be on the field if you make mental errors. So I think that's one thing we have to look at in preseason is look at the grades. We don't get to see him all the time, but just look at the way that this guy's grading out in the games and make sure that he is where he's supposed to be. He's able to line up the defense. That's what that middle linebacker position has done. That takes a lot of ability from a young guy to be able to line guys up and, once again, play your own position. And somebody like a veteran, that's a little easier. But for a guy that's young and has never done it before, that's something we have to look at.
Well, and on that topic, Jeff, I think what bodes well for Goodson is, and a lot of his teammates talked about this during OTAs and the offseason program, vocally he doesn't seem to be shy.
He's
embracing the fact that
that's
he can
good.
Put everybody in the same position. And Jonathan Casillas, who spoke to the media, said that he was quite impressed that Goodson has made a very smooth transition. That's step one before you even involve the X's and O's. If you don't have the confidence again in the huddle, Jeff, and direct guys, that's going to be a problem playing
that
position.
It's going to be a problem because, you know what, you're going to be intimidated. You're going to be intimidated by the other guys around you. You got to be – that's a leader – that is a prime leadership position. Look at Antonio Pierce. You got guys like Strahan and Osi and Tuck and this. Listen, Pierce took no backseat to those guys. He was in that huddle and telling Stray, hey, get your butt over here and do this and this and that. You know, BJ's got to be – even though he's young, he cannot play like he's young. He has to get in there and play like a veteran, take that leadership role. That's something that they put on him, and he has to prove that he can do it. So far, so good. I mean, obviously, he's penciled in there as a starter, but the fact is that he's obviously showing Spags that he can do it. And doing it and preparing for it are two different things. You got to prepare and do it at the same time, be successful at it, which makes you a good player.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Chris in California. Chris, what's happening?
Hi, Chris.
Hey, guys. I wanted to ask a question about Eli Manning's legacy. What do you guys think about that? I mean, if you imagine a scenario where Eli wins his third Super Bowl, gets his third Super Bowl MVP, what do you guys think that does for his legacy? I think he got ranked like 16th on the best quarterbacks. Ben Roethlisberger was number 11, I think.
All right.
And my other question was, are you guys, if he does get to the Super Bowl, if the Giants do get to the Super Bowl and they play the Patriots, do you guys want to see the Patriots? Or do you feel like, you know, if they do play the Pats and they lose, do you think, like for me, in some small way, that would almost negate the first two.
No way.
That they won.
You cannot negate two Super Bowls. He has them.
Yeah.
They
don't take
them
away.
They don't take away the trophies, thank God, because I've got one of them. They, you know, you're not gonna. But listen, I don't care who the Giants play, if it's the Patriots or whoever. I mean, I heard something on the radio that the odds makers have the Patriots going undefeated again. Well, that's
there
fine.
That
just set it up again in 2017, 10 years later, the anniversary of the 2007 Super Bowl team this year beat the undefeated Patriots back then. Let them go. I don't care who the Giants play as long as they're in the Super Bowl. But it would be pretty fun to talk about. But as far as Eli's legacy, I think he can only do better going forward. I mean, if he did what you just said, his legacy would, you know, and he's never going to be the guy that's ranked up there in the top of the quarterbacks. But the fact of the matter is, as far as from a New York Giants perspective, you know, one of the best to ever play the game here in a Giants uniform. No one will wear number 10 after he leaves. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Trivia question for you. Who wore number 10 before Eli got it?
I wonder
who. Do you
know
how many quarterbacks have won multiple Super Bowl MVPs? It's only a couple, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It can't be that many, but I mean, certainly not. I mean, I just think that Eli, you know, listen, I think if he can stay healthy and that offensive line can play the way that they're supposed to, he could put up some really good numbers and lead this team on in the postseason. It's certainly further than they did last year. I think, you know, when you talk about a team and a team coming back after the season is over and getting together collectively for the first time in training camp, you know, what are some of the themes as a coach that you bring up? I promise you, I've been around it before. The first thing that a coach mentions is that, hey, by the way, 2016, we lost a playoff game. Okay, we were an 11-5 team and having a chance to go further. That's a bad taste in our mouth. We need to get that out of our mouth now that we lost our last game to the Packers. We didn't play well. You play all that season to get to that one game and you don't play very well. You got to build on that, and that's something to really try to invoke on the new guys, the younger guys. Hey, listen, this is a new season, but we're looking back on what happened at the end of last season, and we're building on that. That's something you got to message.
In terms of Super Bowl MVPs, Eli's tied with Terry Bradshaw and Bart Starr. They each have two. Joe Montana has three. Brady has four in terms of quarterbacks over the course of NFL history.
That's a great group to be in when you think about those names right there. And the fact is that he's only one MVP away from being second all time.
To tie with Montana.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think Eli's legacy strictly revolves more around the postseason than the regular season. I think when you really set him apart from the rest of the pack.
Because, man, he really plays in the postseason.
And that's why I don't think he needs another Super Bowl and another MVP to make that clear, because I think it's already clear that the quarterback that we see in the postseason is not necessarily the same quarterback that we've seen consistently in the regular season.
Yeah.
So that the conversation with Eli Manning always focuses about how he elevates his game in the postseason. That's why you don't really see him highly ranked in all of these lists in terms of the regular season. I don't think that's wrong, because there are more impressive quarterbacks who have put up better numbers and have been more efficient in the regular season. I mean, I think even Giants fans can at least understand that. But when it comes to the postseason, that's where Eli has separated himself from the rest of the pack.
Well, look at Drew Brees. Drew Brees, for example.
Yeah.
Okay, he's only got one Super Bowl, but he's throwing up for 5,000 yards every single season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there is a comparison when you talk about things like that. But, you know, the question is what is it in the postseason? And Eli Manning, certainly, you know, you tip your hat to him on that, because he's the guy.
Absolutely. And appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. 201-939.
Yes,
you're welcome.
You got it. 4513. Let's head back to the lines. We got Joe in the swamp. All right, Joe.
Why are you in the swamp, Joe? You all right?
You guys, on.
Okay.
Joe from Gainesville.
Joe, okay. How we doing, Joe?
Good, man. How do you guys like the early start today?
Well, we've done it before. No different.
Yeah, you know, it's still the same building, still the same microphone, and still the same caller, so we're all right with it. How about you? You okay?
Cool. Yeah, man. I'm excited for training camp. By the way, are you guys going to be streaming that?
Camp? No, we won't be streaming what they do on the practice field. There'll be highlights on some of the shows a little bit later on in the day, but there won't be a live stream of what goes on the practice field. There'll be just some highlights here or there. Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, yeah, what the last caller was saying, I've envisioned that myself, the trifecta. Could you imagine how legendary
that would be. Like, I would love to see the Giants see the Pats in the Super Bowl. I mean, I'd take the risk of losing just for the chance of getting the trifecta.
Yeah, yeah. And the trifecta of winning three against the Patriots, too, would be amazing.
That would be something.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, you talk about how Patriots fans don't like the Giants now. Can you imagine if that happens?
Well, it's hard enough to beat the Patriots once, let alone three.
It would be legendary.
Yeah, it really would. It really would. It might drive Tom Brady to retire after that, you know?
Probably. Before that, you guys were talking about Goodson, and I was glad you brought him up because I had a couple, like, questions about him. I mean, he's got a huge role this season. Is he going to be, like, checking in the blitzes and coverages, or is he just relaying messages from SPACs?
Well, I think you'll see a little bit of both, and I think that's going to be an indication of his progression and his maturity at that position. You know, there is going to be a lot of responsibility. Listen, anytime you're in the game as a starting inside linebacker position, you have some responsibilities to get in and out of certain defenses because of personnel. Once something, the microphone goes off, the little speaker in his helmet goes off, then, you know, it's up to you to make the plays and make changes. That's going to come from experience. I think that some of the preseason games, he's going to get used to those calls. He's going to get used to hearing SPACs. He's going to get used to identifying certain offensive sets, and that's going to be, as it time goes, maybe a little bit more responsibility is put on him. I think at the beginning, you know, he might get a little bit of help from Casillas, who's been in there. He's a veteran. The guy's played that position before.
And Casillas has also worn the helmet going back to last year. So even though Goodson is the middle linebacker, they may ease him in where Casillas actually wears the helmet. Goodson then relays the plays once he coordinates with Casillas. We've seen that done before, and Casillas has talked about that, though. Casillas has also said that he wouldn't mind if somebody else has that responsibility.
Oh, that's what I was saying before, because, listen, it's a very difficult thing to understand. It's almost like in our industry when we're doing shows and we have the IFBs in our ears and the producer is talking to us in our ear and we are carrying on a conversation, it's something you have to get used to. You got to be able to talk over when somebody is listening or talking to you. Same thing on defense. You're sitting there making calls. The coach, they will talk to you until the cows come home. That's why they cut it off. That's really, seriously. So they will not shut up on the sideline. I don't know what the number is, but the fact is that they got to shut up at one point in time so the guy can figure about to play the game. And that is something you have to really understand and learn how to do. And it's something they do at practice. They have the walkie-talkies. They call them in during the plays, during practice, because this isn't just something they do in the game. They're doing it every day at practice, so it becomes just normal for these guys. They're hearing it in their sleep after a while. They hear Spags' voice in the corridor sometimes, walking down. They don't know where his voice is coming from.
Indeed.
That's funny. All right. Well, just two more things, and I'll get off the air. I think that Goodson looks like a really good run stopper. I mean, he hasn't done many snaps.
Well, that's what he was known
at
for Clemson.
I'm not sure about his coverage skills. He looks like a good run stopper, though.
Yeah, like I said, that was his MO at Clemson. So I don't think that's necessarily surprising. And you're right, coverage is going to be something that he'll have to continue to develop and work at.
Okay, and last question, I'll let you guys go. OBJ's comments, I know you've heard it, and I'm not sure whether I'm being sensitive or not, but just as a big, like, passionate Giants fan and a big Odell fan, when I hear him talking about money, you know, it's just like he knows he's going to get paid big. You don't need to – just be humble and wait for your contract. He's going to get $20 million, but now he's talking about he wants, like, the highest paid. So at this point, that would be $26 million. I mean, is he just delusional or is it just talk? What do you guys think about that? All right, thanks, guys.
Appreciate the phone call, Joel. I mean, at this point, it is just talk. I think that's well documented. He was referring to the uninterrupted video that was posted yesterday. In reality, Odell Beckham's under contract for two more years. He still is under his rookie contract. He has this year. He has next year because the Giants picked up their fifth-year option. And, you know, I mean, I'm not necessarily interested in getting in the game of speculation, Jeff, but you also have the franchise tag. You have the transition tag. So, I mean, the Giants have a number of different options based on the CBA that giving him a long-term contract is not necessarily the first thing that has to be taken care of at this very moment. Players talk about contracts. Players talk about a lot of things off the field. It gets a lot of publicity, but the focus right now for the Giants is the 2017 season. I don't really think it's about worrying about a player that already has 2 years left on his rookie contract.
And you don't want it to be the focal point of the whole training camp, okay? And so I think when it starts to get that way, then it becomes a distraction. You don't want it to be a distraction. He has every right to expect his contract, wanting to be the highest paid player. You know, any CEO, anybody that works that wants to be the highest paid at their position, that's fine. But, you know, if it keeps going further and further and further, you know, that's when you got to kind of stop the chatter about it and understand, like Lance said, you know, listen, the guy's under contract for 2 more years. There's an option to use a franchise tag on him, things like that. You know, the fact is just go out and play. Be a team player. As you say, be humble. Let it be known that you want to be the highest paid player and let your actions speak louder than words and go do it. You know, and he is a special player. He is going to make a lot of money. In my opinion, will he be the highest paid player in the league? No. Will he be the highest paid receiver in the league? Probably. But, you know, anytime you're going to start paying a receiver more than quarterbacks and defensive linemen, defensive ends, I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, it's unheard of, as you mentioned, Jeff.
It's not going to happen.
It's the quarterbacks. I was actually going over, if you look at the top average annual salaries in the NFL entering the 2017 season, they listed the top 25 salaries. Quarterbacks make up about 21 of the 25 players. There's only about 4 other players, and one of them is Antonio Brown, who's the highest paid wide receiver at $17 million. Von Miller's up there in terms of the Denver Broncos pass rusher. But quarterbacks, as we know, I mean, those are the guys that make the big bucks and take up the biggest portion of the salary cap. It's unlikely that teams are going to throw a great deal of money at wide receivers, but we'll see. Like I said, 2 years left on his rookie contract. It's just a game of speculation and headlines at this point. It's not really substantive. Let's head back to the phone lines and we check in with Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, we don't have Charlie? All right, we lost Charlie. How about Ahmad in New Hyde Park? Ahmad, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going? First of all, I want to say thank you guys for keeping content fresh. This is my first time calling. I haven't missed an episode since the off season. You guys do a great job. I
give
it an hour every day, and all I do is listen to you guys on the podcast when I miss you guys on the live broadcast.
Nice. What a true Big Blue kickoff
appreciate
live
that,
guy.
Ahmad. Absolutely. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Now, I wanted to open up the discussions for two things very quickly.
Sure.
One thing was that we speak about having a sophomore slump with Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott, but I wanted to ask you guys, what's the chances that our rookies from last year have a sophomore slump this year, whereas in Sterling Shepard, Preston Parker, and Paul Perkins and Eli Apple, what are the chances that they take a downfall from their high performance years last year?
Well, Paul Perkins did not play much. I mean, he only really became the starter the last 4 games. So, to me, it's hard to have a sophomore slump when you pretty much flash briefly at the end of last season. I would not throw him in the group.
No.
I think, if anything, he gave you a flash of what he could do moving forward. The other two obviously played much more last season.
Sure, yeah. And really, sophomore slumps are you know, it's just – they're ironic. I think they just happen – I think there are little guys, you kind of like point them out a little bit here and there. You know, rookies, it's a tough year for a rookie. The second year, guys come in a little bit more experienced. They think they know the game, and really their preparation lacks in their sophomore year, because their freshman year, their rookie year, they don't know what's going on. They're being taught how to prepare. They're probably over-preparing. In their sophomore year, they're like, oh, you know, I played pretty good. You know, made a little bit of money. Now I'm on the team. There's no way they're going to cut me. So I think it all comes out of, as far as the player goes, is his preparation's got to be even more than it was the year before. And I'll tell you what helps that. That's called leadership. Guys around you. You got Cromartie. You got Jenkins. You got guys like that are going to help Eli Apple improve. I read the other day that Eli Apple's put a little weight on. He feels that that's going to help him a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, these are steps in the right direction for guys like in their sophomore year. Paul Perkins, yeah, you know, didn't play much last year. I think there's a big upside to him being named the starter. I think he's going to take that and run with it. No pun intended, but I think that that he'll be fine.
And thank you so much.
You're
That's
welcome.
Good. It's more mental. And the last question I wanted to ask was about Coach Ben McAdoo. We all know that he worked under Coach Mike McCarthy and the Green Bay Packers. We played the Packers twice, and we happened to lose 2 times. I wanted to know, do we have a bug where he can't just beat Mike McCarthy because Mike McCarthy knows his schemes and plans and has a, you know, a finger over our coach? And that's all. Thank you guys very much for taking my call. And
keep listening.
All right, Mike. Appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
It's a small sample size at this point. So to say that some coach has another coach's number, I don't know if I would go that far. I mean, I think the better one would be what Andy Reid has been able to do, for example, after buys, and how he's had a really good track record against NFC East opponents, even now that he's in the AFC, because you have a much bigger sample size to go by. There is familiarity, though, clearly, between Mike McCarthy and Ben McAdoo, because Ben McAdoo was under Mike McCarthy. But it's just a matter of matchups and what types of tweaks I think you can make from season to season.
And how the team plays. I mean, look at the receivers, how they played that game. They were horrible.
Yep.
They were horrible.
Special teams issues.
Brad Wing had his worst game of the year after being brilliant the whole season. So, you know, it's ironic that those guys don't play well, and then Ben McAdoo loses to his mentor in a playoff game. I think you hit it where you say, you know, look at Andy Reid and coming off byes against NFC opponents. That's something real. I mean, they definitely got your hand in that one.
Well, and the other thing to note for those two Packers games that you were touching on, Jeff, is even in the first matchup that the Giants lost when they were in Green Bay early in the regular season, Aaron Rodgers is picked off twice by Janoris Jenkins, changes field position, and the Giants had issues holding on to the football themselves. Remember, yeah. Eli loses the ball on a sack strip, and then that turns
DRC
into...
DRC gets hurt.
Correct. So a lot of things happen. I mean, is that coaching? I don't think... That's just coaching. I think that's simplifying it to just say that that's an edge for Mike McCarthy. Sometimes you just don't know how these games are going to play out. If the execution's not there, it doesn't matter who's coaching the team. It's going to obviously negatively impact the squad if they can't hold on to the football.
There's times when you scratch your head at certain things that coaches do in a game that cost people games, but for the most part, 90% of the time, it's the players. It's the players making the plays. It's the players not making the plays. It's those things called mental errors that I mentioned to you about. Those are things that cost you football games. Now, at the end of games, as we know, look back a couple years ago with Tom Coughlin. What happened with that? I mean, all of a sudden, here's Tom Coughlin who seemingly lost his head on some of these plays at the end of the games. Remember, the last five games in the last 2 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a combination of both players and coaches collectively getting together and having a, you know, something going wrong, major malfunction here. I mean, that season was incredible.
Yeah, it was very unique.
Very unique situation. So, anyways, yeah, it's just, you know, when it really comes down to it, these coaches do a tremendous job preparing the players. It's up to the players to prepare themselves, look in the game plan, do their study. One thing that these young guys are going to give you a little insight into the training camp world is that, you know, this is a totally different scenario for these young guys. They're coming out of college where they're only allowed to be at the facility for so many hours a day and so many hours a week. The change now is that they are going to live here. This is their job now. They're expected to be here. They're expected to put in extra hours without anybody telling them what to do. So this is a learning experience for a lot of these younger guys that are here today and moving forward. It's going to be a lot different than what they're used to. I mean, they got a little taste of it in minicamp because minicamp is a lot like training camp. There's two practices. You know, there's one real practice, a walkthrough. You have meetings in the morning. You have meetings in the evening. They come in early in the morning. They go home late at night. That's basically a sample of what training camp is going to be like for the next 4 weeks. That's only 3 days when they're here for minicamp. So, you know, and really from a rookie standpoint, you just have to pay attention to every single detail. Watch every veteran, how they do things, what time they get into the training room, what time they get out of here, what time do they go work out, how do they do this, how do they do that. You're like a fly on the wall. You're absorbing everything that these veterans are doing, and there's no better chance than you have because you're in the building, you're on the team right now. You got to learn from these other guys, and it's a great experience for some of these guys. Now, some of these guys are going to be cut from this team, and they're going to go on and have good careers. Some of them are going to get cut from this team and never make the NFL ever again. You know, so you got to do what you can to improve your skill and show the coaches that you are 100%, 110% in. You know, no going home early, no being a wimp as far as, oh, my finger hurts. I'm telling you, you got to be on the field.
Yeah.
They always say you can't make the club in the tub. That's what that term means. If you're in the training room, you're not making the club. You got to be on the field playing.
Yeah, if you're a rookie, no longer do you have to balance schoolwork with practice.
No, there's none of that. Your schoolwork solely, now is that iPad at home studying.
Yeah.
Football, 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 football.
And then football again.
And football, and by the way, and eating. The one thing you can't do at training camp is eat and eat and eat. That's all you do. You eat, you sleep, and you play football. That's all you do here.
Want to get to a tweet or two before we wrap up. Real quickly, AJ at AJ Marshall 3. If the Giants decide to go with four tight ends, will they go with five wide receivers on the 53? I don't think four tight ends is going to impact whether or not they keep five or six wide receivers. They've kept four tight ends before, and they've also kept six wide receivers. So I don't think really one has anything to do with the other.
The only thing that one will have to do with the other there is if they keep a fullback. Okay.
That may present a wild card, but I guess I'm looking at it. If Rhett Ellison, in their mind, Jeff, is the tight end slash fullback, and he counts, obviously, as one of the four tight ends, then I think there's no harm in then keeping six wide receivers. I don't think that should really impact the offense.
And Rhett Ellison could be
– He could be that dual guy.
Or he could be counted in your offensive line group. You know,
very true.
And then so I think it's going to come down to the health of Matt Lacoste at that position. Tip – just hands down, if he stay healthy, I think he makes the team, and then it will be between him and Will Tye. I think the other guys obviously are going to be on the team. Rhett Ellison is going to be on the team.
Engram, Jarrell Adams,
exactly.
Those three guys I think are pretty safe. I agree. It's more of Matt Lacoste versus Will Tye because Lacoste is healthy.
Yeah. I think the question is the back end of the roster as far as the receivers is who can play some good special teams, and that's going to be
huge.
Dwayne Harris, you know, guys like Darius Poe, the guys that are kind of on the bubble a little bit. You know, I think that Dwayne Harris is going to be the guy. I think Travis Rudolph is a guy you got to look for. And, you know, he's kind of my little, you know, he's my kind
of,
my little gem. I like to see him make the football.
Of course. Well, you always like to look at the
guys
on the back end of the roster.
Even though he went to FSU. Even though he went to FSU.
Well, Jeff will have to make the sacrifices. Yeah. He'll put the Miami
Allegiant.
We're
talking about Florida State. We've got guys calling in from Gainesville. I mean,
I know,
none of them
want
to mention
everything.
The Canes.
It's amazing.
You know? So,
boy,
anyway.
It's unreal what you got to deal with.
Well, our time has gone by quickly again.
It has indeed. We do appreciate those of you for waking up early and joining us here on the program. Throughout training camp, BBKL is now at 10 a.m. Eastern. So we will be back up and running on Monday with a new program at 10 a.m. Eastern. First practice gets underway at 11:40 a.m. Eastern. Highlights and full coverage will be up on Giants.com. For Jeff Eagles, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Friday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.